a passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver. Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to the Dr. Kevin Show here on OM Times, where we're changing the world, wait for it, one OM at a time. So this is the first Thursday of June, and on the first Thursday of every month, we welcome none other than that scoundrel, Matt Connerton from Matt Connerton Unleashed, where he creates havoc Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. drive time in Manchester, New Hampshire, 95.3 WMNH. You can go to mattconnerton.com or ipmnation.com, and you can get his show if you're not in the greater Manch Vegas area. That is Manch Vegas, New Hampshire. And be part of his show. Today, you can be part of this show, where Matt and I are going to be talking about what's going on in the world, what's wrong with the world, and how Matt's going to fix it and make everything okay. Because that's what we do. You got this. And so we're going to start with, I telling you, you can be part of this conversation. You can do that by calling in at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. Ask your questions, share your comments. The only thing we ask is that you must be respectful, or we will do the off with your head and just hang up on you. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
Okay. You missed a couple of shows this week. What's up? You okay, buddy?
Yeah, I had a personal issue arise, which I'm kind of keeping to myself. Really, the only other person who knows about it is Jenny. But yeah, I did have to. I had to take a couple of days off this week, which is very, very rare for me. So if I can't be here, and I say here because, you know, I just got off the air, so obviously I'm still at the station. If I can't be here for my show, a best of, you know, the software automatically queues up. I've got about, I think I have over 40 of them, best of episodes that I've produced over the years. So one of those automatically comes on if I'm not here for some reason. But yeah, so I took Monday and Tuesday off and just had to deal with some things. But everything's fine. Everything's good, you know. But I'll tell you, it is weird. I keep forgetting what day it is, you know, because I had to kind of remind myself it was Thursday because it doesn't feel like Thursday to me because I took Monday and Tuesday off. So
yeah, obviously we're not going to poke into whatever the personal is. You know my number. You know where I am. If you want the old judge from the Dr. Kevin Oracle cycle, you know where to reach me. So we're going to drop that topic and move on. I completely understand why you don't want to talk about those couple of days where you're going through gender reassignment surgery. I get it. It's personal. We obviously don't want to talk about that on the air. So what's been going on?
Aside from the gender reassignment, So what's going on just generally? Well, what went on was I had an adidectomy. No, that's a very old joke, but you opened the door to that. What do you mean?
It was about time you found it. It's about time you got one. So anyways, as always, there's a lot going on in the world, but I'd like to find out, because you have a running dialogue of all of the ills of the world, so to speak. I would say all of the hopeful promise, but I don't think you've been on that page for a couple of years now. I think it's mostly ills. So what's been the hot topics of your show?
Well, Uvalde, of course, and gun control has been a hot topic, and Russia's war in Ukraine, of course, and actually today on the show we were talking about the baby formula shortage and how you know, I feel like we're in a third world country. Never thought we'd see anything like that. I don't know if you saw it, but Brian Deese was on Jake Tapper's show on CNN, and you know, of course, ducking and dodging and obfuscating, and the interview ended abruptly when the camera that Brian Deese was on, you know, he was being interviewed from the one of the lawns at the White House, and all of a sudden the camera falls over, and that was the end of that segment. It's pretty pretty remarkable. Oh, and we were talking about
Hardy.
Jake Tapper did well, though. He was asking hard questions, and it was good on him. But we were also talking too about I don't know if you know this, but Roger Stone has declared that there is currently a satanic portal that has opened up directly over the White House, and apparently has been there since Inauguration Day, and you can see it in the sky, and he claims it's a satanic portal, and we must all engage in what is called a prayer assault in order to close the portal. So that's very exciting. So tomorrow on the show, a gentleman named Steve Despain is going to join us, who knows about things like that. And he's going to join John Hopwood and Jenny and I for a discussion about that. So that should be fascinating, because that's really an underreported story. You know, everybody's talking about the war and about, you know, guns and all that. But nobody's talking about the satanic portal. And thank goodness we have Roger Stone to bring that to our attention.
And I'm just surprised he doesn't want to assault it with a rifle, because he's all about assault rifles and protecting them.
Well, I think ideally he'd probably like to shoot a nuke through it, but that would have other unintended consequences that go with it. So, yeah, I don't think you can really do much to a satanic portal. I think once the portal is there, we're just going to have to accept it and just try not to go through it, because I assume if you go through it, you end up, I don't know, probably in hell, if I had to guess, you know.
Is that what they're calling
Trump into the portal. Yeah.
Well, I was kind of thinking that, you know, that the other side of the portal probably showed up at Mar-a-Lago. Yeah, Mar-a-Lago. I mean, you know, and Roger would never shoot the nuke into the satanic thing, because what's he going to do if he blows Trump up? I mean, you know, he has no purpose left in life. He has no meaning.
Well, I was genuinely surprised. See, I didn't know. I'd never known. I mean, we all know about Roger Stone, but I'd never known him to really be kind of a weird religious kook type of guy who would get into things like satanic portals. But, you know, obviously he just needs a new grift or an extension of his existing grift, you know, and he's old now, and, you know, this is, so it's okay to be a little crazy, I guess. I don't know.
Well, you know, understand, I got what this is. You know, this, him and Mike Lydell and, you know, the whole cadre of, you know, the Trumpettes are all trying to give Fox News enough to talk about that they don't have to talk about the real stories that make their guy look bad. You know, they have to fill the news with something. So I'm sure Fox News is reporting on it and is ignoring, you know, the latest set of discoveries around the January 6th investigation committee, because that's not nearly as important to the American people as this satanic portal.
Well, it, in all fairness, and I'm not sure if you're kidding when you say that Fox is reporting on it, but no, Fox News, there are things that are too crazy, even for Fox News. And no, I don't think even Newsmax is reporting on it. No, I got it from, there's a website, I've probably talked about it on your show before, called rightwingwatch.org. Mm-hmm. And Roger Stone was on some podcast talking about the Satanic Portal. One of these religious podcasts. So, no, I don't think even Fox would. I mean, you know, I'm sure Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham and people like that, I'm sure they would believe that there's a satanic portal, but I don't think they're actually reporting on it, in fairness to them.
Yeah. Wait. they'll have to do it as a filler at some point, I'm sure, because there's so much of the news that they can't report these days.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying. So, okay. So,
I know it's hard to know where to go from there, isn't it?
I know.
When you start with a satanic portal, it's like, where do you go? It just makes everything else seem so trivial.
Go to hell after dark. It's a sin-filled city. It's an amusement park. Oh, Kris Kristofferson, A Star Is Born. Anyways.
Oh, yes.
So let's talk about Ukraine. Mm. I know that you have pretty much said that, you know, in the last couple of times we've talked, you know, mired down for years, there's not going to ever be clear victory. I see that we are ramping up what we're sending. I know Ukraine has had a couple of setbacks. Has there been anything that has shifted your opinion or any thoughts you have on what's going on in Ukraine, especially if it is something that you ferret out things that are not always in the mainstream news because you're nosy? I mean, because you're a good journalistic reporter who digs deep. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. So give us your take on Ukraine these days. Has anything shifted, about the same? And we're ramping up what we're sending, and now they are putting a stronger oil and gas embargo on Russia. Europe is. So talk to me about the Ukraine. What's up?
I wouldn't say in a broad sense anything has changed in terms of my belief that this will just continue to drag on, grind on, might be a better way of putting it, for years. I don't see anybody giving in. I think Putin is, the only thing that might cause Putin to want to hurry up and maybe get to a negotiating table, I think, is, you know, there continues to be these persistent, none of it's confirmed, but these persistent rumors that he has terminal cancer, or perhaps even Parkinson's or both. But I don't think that, you know, I mean, it's you watch what's going on, and, you know, there's one day where it looks like, you know, like Zelensky has said this week that Russia now controls about 1/5 of Ukraine, which is bad. That's a significant portion, 1/5. On the other hand, you know, the Ukrainians have been successful at beating back the Russians in certain areas, which is, you know, so it the pendulum kind of swings back and forth. And sometimes in a given day, it depends on what article from what website you're reading. You know, you might get a different impression of who's making gains, who's making headway. But in the grand scheme of it, if you sum it all up, it to me, it just looks like a stalemate that will likely just continue to be. You know, we continue to send weapons, and we are ramping up what we're sending. And like you mentioned, they're going to ramp up the oil embargo. And apparently OPEC is going to increase production, which might help with gas prices here domestically, although it's not just a matter. People kind of misunderstand that it's not strictly a matter of production. It's also a matter of the refinery capacity. But my broad sense of it is that it continues to be a stalemate. I have concerns about, you know, apparently now. Actually, this is a pretty significant development. You probably saw this. We're now sending them a weapon system that can launch missiles pretty far. I forget how far, but they had to be warned. The Ukrainians had to be warned. Do not use these to hit targets inside of Russia. These are strictly defensive weapons. Do not fire into Russia with these. And then I worry about a potential escalation. I'm not saying we shouldn't give them these weapons. I've never said that. But I do worry. You know, I always worry about a potential escalation. And, you know, what if Ukraine accidentally does fire something that we've given them into Russia? Does Putin use that as an excuse to escalate or maybe get into an actual confrontation directly with the West, which I don't think is likely. So I don't want to alarm anybody. But I worry about it, of course. I think we all worry about it. But that's a pretty significant development that we're now giving them something that could potentially, if a mistake is made or somebody goes rogue and maybe does something they're not supposed to do, they could actually fire missiles directly into Russia. So everything continues to ramp up. Obviously, the defense contractors in the United States or anyone who does business with us, they're very happy. But I see this just going on, grinding on. I mean, how long were the Russians in Afghanistan? You know, they'll hang in there, and Ukraine will continue to try to fight them off. And I mean, I think the best we can hope for is Ukraine to be able to continue to fight off the Russians enough so that Ukraine is in the best possible position to go to the negotiating table if Russia decides we're ready to seriously negotiate. But otherwise, yeah, I think this just grinds on. I don't think we're going to see the end of this for a very long time.
Well, obviously, part of that depends on whether Putin is actually terminally ill. And there's an upside and a downside to that. The upside, obviously, if he's terminally ill and he dies, whoever takes over, are they going to use Putin's death as a way to extradite themselves from a very expensive, costly, on a lot of fronts, war that's not getting them much?
Mm-hmm.
So on the upside, it may only go on as long as Putin's life does. And even if he's not terminally ill, he's not necessarily a young man either. On the downside, if Putin is terminally ill, I have thought, dead men have nothing to lose. Dying men have nothing to lose. If the doctor says, you know, you have 3 months max, and Putin wants to leave a big splash on the way out the door, hey, definitely he could make some pretty stupid decisions.
True, but I hear the music.
And we'll be right back here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
Conscious media for conscious minds. Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet?
I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger.
I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times. This week I am on with Matt Connaughton, as I am on the first Monday, first Thursday. It's Monday. Now you've got me doing it, Matt, at the first Thursday of the month. And if you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in at 202-570-7057. Again, that's 202-570-7057. Just remember, if you call in, be respectful. You know, I feel like as any caged or wounded animal, Putin may, between now and whenever he decides to treat the world to the joyous moment of his death. Oh, did that come out sarcastic? that is when it's, I feel like it could be most dangerous, especially if he's got a terminal. I just got to throw that out there.
I think that's a legitimate concern to have. And even if he's not really dying, you know, people have wondered and worried about, you know, a trapped Putin. So what if, say he's fine, does he become more dangerous just because he feels trapped? He feels cornered. Does he get desperate? Now, I am optimistic that that is not the case, because there's also a theory that the reason he's doing all this, look, and one of the things that is so frustrating and has been from the beginning of this war, is that nobody really knows what goes on in Vladimir Putin's head. You know, we can only speculate and guess. I mean, they're educated guesses, but based on things that he has said and done in the past and so forth. But I think there's a strong belief that the reason he's doing this now is he felt it was finally the right moment, because he's probably waited a long time to do this, to attempt to reconstitute in some form or fashion the Soviet Union and restore Mother Russia to its former glory in some way, and that he cares about his legacy. He does not want to go down in history as someone who allowed this opportunity to pass. He wants to go down in history as someone who restored the former Soviet Union. And if he's going to die in the process of doing that, well, at least he got the ball rolling, and he'll be remembered in history as the one who made the first moves to try to reconstitute the Soviet Union by taking back Ukraine. So I think the general consensus is that he's not crazy, and that he's not going to do something. He's not going to blow up the world on his way out the door, because that's just not what he's after. That's not what he's trying to do. And that he is a rational actor in the sense that, I mean, what he's done is irrational, but he's a rational actor in the sense that he's not insane. And I think the general consensus is that he's not insane. But then again, I mean, some people have said that, you know, there may be some cognitive decline, which doesn't mean insane, but just that, you know, he might be slipping, and that may be clouding his judgment. So those are legitimate things to be concerned about. But hopefully it's not the case.
Well, obviously, the path forward is clear. We need to get Roger to move the Satanic Gate over to Moscow.
Oh, that would be perfect.
And then put it on vacuum, you know, on vacuum mode, so it sucks in.
Yes. Yeah.
And then,
I mean, he.
There you go.
I was just going to say, you mentioned earlier too about his age. you know, I believe he's either 70 or is about to be 70. And, you know, regardless of health, you know, he's Russian. In Russia, males don't live longer than 72 on average. So he's at the end of the road no matter what. They don't have a great life expectancy in Russia, and it has not improved much over the decades.
Yep. He will be 70 on October 7th.
Okay.
So that's what it says.
Yeah.
I just looked it up. Okay. Well, we're going to move away from Ukraine. Though, I have to say, Zelensky is definitely hugely leveraging social media to continue to get as much friggin' support as he can.
Oh, he's done an excellent job of that. Absolutely excellent job.
And, you know, it's one of the things that I think that rallied support as much as it did and as quick as it did and continues to rally it is he, in his own way, keeps it in the news even when the news cycle gets sucked to something else. He has his own version of keeping it in the news, keeping it fresh, getting those pictures out. I mean, every time I see one of anything, I automatically like it just to put that count up to just, you know, because I know that means it gets, you know, I understand how social media works on an idiot's level. You know, so I go out of my way to like everything and, you know, send it on its way in whatever way I can. But I'm going, he is the model of the new world order of people in those kind of positions, and he's handling it so well.
Well, it probably helps that he comes from the entertainment industry, and you know, so he gets it, you know.
Yeah, and how old is he? In his 40s?
Yeah, he's young. I think he's maybe mid 40s, maybe 45.
Yeah. You know, when you compare him to people like, you know, Putin was probably launching his dirty deals, and the murders he was responsible for was probably in triple digits by the time, Zelensky was born. And
right.
Trump probably had, you know, scored at least a four digit people he'd screwed over by the time about it before he born, and it really shows. So I just had to get those 2 cents in. So let's talk about the January 6th, because I want to save the whole gun stuff for last, because I do want to talk about the gun stuff, and I want to get your thoughts, and I also have some thoughts that I want to share. So, but More shit's coming out. Does anybody still care? Do you think anything is shifting? Do you think that there's more subpoenas? There's more grand juries? What's your thought? Or did they stonewall it enough that it's going to end up shooting blanks?
Well, I think the committee continues to do a great job, but I don't have confidence in the Justice Department. I don't have confidence in Merrick Garland. You know, they should be using the force of law to the fullest extent possible to compel these people to actually show up and cooperate when they're subpoenaed, and they don't. And you know, but it goes back to what I was saying last time I was on the show. You know, Democrats, I mean, we're in a terrible situation here with both parties. We've got the Republicans who tried to subvert the election and will try to do the same in future elections, and they're setting things up across the country to be able to do that. And then we've got the Democrats who are too weak and too spineless to do what it takes to stop them. So we're in a tough spot, and I don't think Merrick the Mild is necessarily the guy who's going to get it done in terms of enforcing these subpoenas. So I don't know. I don't know where we end up with that.
I mean, I have heard one interesting spin. And maybe there's truth to it, maybe there's not. That he's letting these committees spend their resources, their monies, getting all of this stuff. The Justice Department has now been requesting and grabbing a ton of the work that the committee has done. And that, as, you know, as soon as the committee has been eliminated, if we lose the House, you know, if the House goes Republican, which I know you're probably still standing on the side of, even with all of the messes that continue to happen.
Oh, yeah, I think absolutely. Yeah.
That, and so the committee will get disbanded, but then the theory or the speculation I heard is he's got all this stuff. He's grabbed all of this stuff. All of this legwork is done for him. And that's when he's going to close the trap.
Hope so.
So, I don't know. From my lips to his ears.
Yeah.
Because the more, with every day, there's more damning stuff that's coming out. It's just
yeah,
incredibly sad, the amount of damning stuff that's coming out, you know. Sometimes I just don't even want to look at it anymore. It's kind of like, I feel like, you know, it's like watching a deer in headlights. Like, how much more obvious can it get, and how much more blind can people choose to be? Obviously a lot.
Yes.
Yes. So, interestingly enough, I am a delegate for my church, my Unitarian Universalist Church. I'm a delegate this year, and I'm going to be in Portland, Oregon, where we're going to have thousands of UUs from across the country voting and doing things about the upcoming year. Right when the Supreme Court is supposed to be issuing whatever they're going to issue on Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is, knowing how social justice oriented and how outrageous you Unitarian Universalists tend to get, it's going to be an interesting place to be when this thing falls down. Where do you see this? Do you think that it's already too late, it's gone, we're just waiting for them to bury the corpse? Or do you think there's any chance that there's going to be a rescue mission to not completely upset the apple cart?
No, I think we're just waiting for them to bury the corpse. I don't see any reason why this wouldn't be occurring. I don't see what would stop it, unfortunately. Not to be a downer, but you know, I mean, Clarence Thomas comes out and complains because, you know, apparently he doesn't like dissent. He doesn't like people complaining about the court or questioning the court when the terribly condescending comments he's made, you know, about people having temper tantrums because they don't like, you know, what the court's about to do. But there's no indication that I can see that the court's not going to do this. You know, the draft was definitely real. It's a real draft of a pending decision from the court. So no, it's coming. I'm sure it's coming. You know, everything else that's gone on is you know, with Uvalde, for example, the shooting. You know, that's kind of put this on the back burner for the moment. But no, it's you know, and you already have states preparing for it. You have red states with some of them were already prepared. I didn't even know until this entire story that there was such a thing as trigger laws. Jenny explained mm-hmm. it to me. I didn't even know that was a thing where all these states, and apparently I think 13 of them perhaps, have trigger laws on the books, meaning that as soon as Roe v. Wade is overturned, these laws automatically go into effect, outlawing or at least heavily restricting abortion in all these states. So they don't. So they don't even have to do anything. Yeah, they can just sit back and wait for this. And then when it comes, that's it. They got their way. And I haven't seen or heard anything that suggests that this isn't about to happen. I'm pretty sure it's happening.
Fallout on the other side.
What it do you
happens?
Mean? What
had happens? Is apathetic America just going to put up with it, or do you think you're going to see a resurgence of things around this? Like, what do you think that? What do you think? I mean, obviously, for a lot of Americans, it's going to ruin the validity of the court. When you have three justices lie under oath that it's settled law and they're not going to do anything with it to get in there. Is there going to be a blowback, or is America just going to roll over and take it? I just want to want your thoughts.
Well, when it comes to the court, I mean, there really is, there's nothing to do about it, unfortunately. I mean, you know, these are lifetime appointments. It's not like you get to vote them out. And, people have an idea about the Supreme Court that I've never really had, which is that, it's idealistic, and I guess it's how it's supposed to be, but it's not the reality of it. How it's supposed to be is that the Supreme Court is apolitical. It's one of the three branches of government, but it's not a political branch. But obviously that's not true. That's never been true. Otherwise, we wouldn't have conservative justices and liberal justices, and we wouldn't have a confirmation process that is highly political and always has been. It's gotten worse over time, but it's always been a political process. It's I've never viewed the Supreme Court the way I guess we're supposed to, in that it's not a political like Congress and the executive branch, but it clearly is political, and I don't know what you do about it. I mean, once they do this, I don't know. I mean, everybody, we can all yell and scream as much as we want to, and we absolutely should, but, the only solution would be to elect more Democrats who can then, in the states that they're in, pass state laws protecting abortion, or get enough Democrats in office to do something federally to protect abortion, to actually codify the right to an abortion in law, so that in theory Roe v. Wade itself, it doesn't matter that it's overturned because it's codified in law. But you can't do that because the Republicans are going to pick up seats. People are struggling with inflation. People are struggling with high gas prices. And Biden and the Democrats are getting all the blame, which only acts as an accelerant as far as the opposing party in the midterms, the opposition to whomever is in the White House, of course, always picks up seats. So the Republicans are going to pick up quite a few seats, actually. And so I don't know what you do. I don't see a solution, not short term. When this first happened, I thought, this might be a gift to the Democrats, actually, in the midterms, because this is going to hurt Republicans, and it is going to hurt Republicans. But whatever harm comes to Republicans because of this in the midterms is going to be mitigated and overshadowed by all the harm being done to the Democrats by high inflation and high gas prices. So... no, I don't see a short-term solution. We're going to have to look for long-term solutions, but short-term, there is no solution. The Supreme Court is going to do what they're going to do, and that's going to be it.
Okay.
That's my sunny prediction.
Well, time will tell. We'll be right back, and I want to talk about... the massacres.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Vox Novus, the new voice. Vox Novus, the new dimension. Vox Novus, thought and movement leaders who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate our rapidly changing world. My name is Victor Furman. Join me every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio for Vox Novus, the new voice.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
So, I don't know if you've run across this or not. Well, first of all, welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times. I'm here with Matt Connerton. You can listen to Matt 4 to 6 Monday through Friday at WMNH 95.3 out of Manchester, New Hampshire. Or you can go to mattconnerton.com or ipmnation.com and you can get the show online and you can still talk with Matt and his guest and stuff like that. Speaking about talking with Matt, you can call in right now and talk to Matt or myself. You can share an opinion or a thought here by calling in at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. So, Matt, I don't know whether you've run across this little thing, but one of the things I was reading that 6 of the 9 deadliest mass shootings in the United States since 2018 were by people who were 21 or younger.
Yep.
Which is a huge shift in the demographic of mass murderers.
Yeah, and their weapon of choice more often than not is an AR-15.
Which is one of the ones that people would like to make unavailable.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to hear, because I have thoughts on this, but I want to hear from you first. Because, you know, obviously the killing of 4 in Tulsa, it was only 4 people. So, you know, I mean, you know, you got to be in double digits if you want to capture and keep national headlines for a day or two. Why? Why do you think that we have this, which no other country in the world has, no other developed country has, this increasing string of these shootings? What do you think is going on? And what do we do about it?
Well, what's going on? I mean, there's some clearly some sort of a mental health crisis. You have to be mentally ill to people don't like when I say this for some reason because they take it wrong. But, you know, clearly you have to be mentally ill to do something like this. I say people don't like when I say that because for some reason when I say that, people react as though I'm somehow justifying what they do or using it as an excuse. Oh, no, they're not. They didn't do anything wrong. They're just mentally ill. And it's like, no, that's not at all what I'm saying. But for some reason, people take it that way. I don't think you take it that way, but some people do. But I think we've got a mental health crisis in this country. Our mental health system is not very good. My father is a clinical social worker, and he's been, you know, for as long as I can remember, complaining about the mental health system in this country. And So that's a problem, and I think it's getting worse. I think the pandemic made mental health just broadly across the board worse for people. People are more aggressive now than they used to be. That's why crime has gone up, violent crime has gone up. A lot of negative things have gone up. But so we do have the mental health piece. I also think that, you know, I mean, to me, it seems like a no-brainer. If most of these mass shooters are under 21, you know, and their weapon of choice is an AR-15, then you got to raise the age to 21 to buy a gun. It already is 21. It makes no sense to me, and I think to a lot of people, that in the United States you have to be 21 to buy a handgun. But to buy an assault weapon, you just have to be 18. That doesn't make sense. So even some of the most pro-Second Amendment people I know, and I'm pro-Second Amendment myself. I mean, I believe that law-abiding Americans should have the right to keep and bear arms for self-defense. I firmly believe in that. You know, even the most pro-2A people I know say, or at least are fine with the idea of raising the minimum age to 21 across the board. You know, if you have to be 21 to buy a handgun, you should have to be 21 to buy certainly something like an AR-15. You know, and then there's the ideas of an assault weapons ban, going back to that. I think that's a big hill to climb, though. You know, people who are in favor of that, and I'm not saying I oppose it, I'm open to it, certainly. But people will say, well, we had fewer mass shootings when we had the ban. Which is true, but you know, correlation is not causation. There might be other reasons too. So I think we need to examine that. But I think at the bare minimum, we need to raise the age across the board to 21, and maybe we need to look at banning the AR-15 specifically because, like I said, that seems to be the weapon of choice. So I would start there. I think we need more red flag laws, which is something that a lot of Republicans are on board with. So we can certainly, there's no reason why we can't do that. I mean, Rick Scott, when he was governor of Florida, a Republican, he raised the age to 21 in Florida for a gun. He signed into law mechanics of how it works, but a red flag law in Florida. And he gets to still be a Republican. The NRA didn't come and kidnap him and throw him in a river or something. So, you know, there are things that can be done. Also, expanded background checks. And we do have a system for federal background checks in the country, the NICS system, but obviously we need something more. And that is something that, you know, 90% of the American population when surveyed is in favor of expanded background checks. So that includes Republicans, that includes NRA members. The only ones who are stopping that is the NRA themselves, who give a lot of money to these Republicans, who then won't support expanded background checks only because they don't want that money to stop flowing from the NRA. That's the only reason. So there are things that we can do. I'm not confident that any of them will happen, but there are things that we can do.
So I think that there are two other players here that don't get enough airtime. And they're going to be ones that I know immediately are going to hit some people's hot buttons. But I don't care. Mm-hmm. One is this increase that happened, I think, has a direct correlation with the turn that politics took when Trump started running for office and increased hate talk on mm-hmm. a national level to become perfectly acceptable and to take somebody who may not be the most stable cookie in the cookie jar and feed into their paranoia and feed into their disempowerment and feed into all of that stuff, and that they tacitly feel as if they're having permission by their chosen politicians to take out these vermin that they're going to go kill, or take out whatever. I mean, I see it as, it's not an accident. When you have the decline in the mental health system, and then you take those that are clearly the most mentally unstable, and you have them run for office, inciting all of their mentally unstable friends, when these people are seeing that we were trying to, that still there are those people that say January 6th was trying to save the country from having the election stolen, no matter how much evidence you give them otherwise, no matter how many things you lay out, they are deaf, they are dumb. Well, they're not dumb because they're yelling all over the place, but they are deaf and they are blind. And you cannot do anything with those who choose to be deaf and those who choose to be blind. And I think that that correlation is also that the hate speech is emasculating, is pushing the concept of an emasculated young male who does not have much of a hope of a future, who maybe doesn't feel like they could, they're either, they can get to college, or they can afford college, or they could even get through college, or they have no hope, they have no American dream, and then they're given the other to hate because the immigrants are getting all the money, or the black people are getting all the money, or these people or those people. And well, the top 1% in the income disparity gets the widest it's probably ever been in this country, making it harder and harder for somebody to pursue the American dream. And I think that we have to look that these are very viable sticks of dynamite in this explosive situation.
I think you're right. I can't argue with any of that. I think you're right. You know, and Trump made it cool to be abrasive and aggressive and even to incite violence. He legitimized all that for people, and I think that does probably play a role. I mean, it's impossible to prove it. You can't quantify it. You can't tangibly demonstrate it with data that there's a direct connection there. But it makes a hell of a lot of sense. I think you're right.
Yep. I think that we are creating a, you know, and it's so funny because they are doing what they are accusing the Democrats of doing. Oh, you're being emasculated by the support of gay rights. Oh, you're being emasculated by allowing these immigrants to come in and take your resources and your jobs, the jobs you won't do as you're sitting on unemployment and refuse to do. Okay. But, you know, but they create this hugely toxic scenario. And then they gear them all up that they're going to go in like John Wayne and make things right. And where's that coming from? Well, it started with Reagan. And it reached an all-time high and low in the same moment when it ended with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And you have these enablers who clearly, clearly do not give a shit about struggling Americans. You can see it by the way they vote. You can see it by the way they talk. You can see it by the way they deflect, by the way that they make sure that they take somebody who maybe doesn't have a discerning enough mental capacity to understand that these people who are riling them up about the other are actually the people that are screwing them over.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just they're holding on and they feel powerless and they feel there's no way out. And we started early, we started the radio show with talking about when is Putin most dangerous? Well, if he's dying, if he feels trapped, if he feels caged, this is when most dangerous. And we're ending it with these mass shooters feel trapped or feel like they have no hope. They feel they feel like they have nothing left to lose. They want their, if nothing else, they're going to have their moment of fame. I don't think any of them expect to live through it.
Right.
They have nothing to lose. They are the parallel to Putin in my, well, if he's dying, it's what is most dangerous because he ain't got nothing to lose. And that's because our current political system has basically flushed the American dream for the most part down the toilet because of their narcissistic greed and need for power and lack of anything that resembles empathy or a heart.
I think you're right. I think that's a great insight.
Matt, I'll talk to you in a month.
All right, Dr. Thanks. Kevin, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.